Oh, what's happening, y'all? Back at it on a Friday night, a football Friday here on 97.5 The Fanatic as we broadcast from the Xfinity studio, only from Comcast. Devon Givens with you until 10 o'clock here tonight. A reaction Friday, a victory Friday as the Philadelphia Eagles improve to 2-4-1 on the season. Yes, you heard it right. 2-4-1, taking down division rival, the New York Giants, 22-21 last night in Thursday Night Football, kicking off week number 7. We'll take your reaction to everything from last night's game and the up and down nature of the game that it was, because that's exactly what it was. At one point, folks, after Sterling Shepard scored that touchdown, I'm telling you right now, I was in a text thread, a text chain that I have, of course, with Brian Westbrook and Derek Gunn, my partners on the pregame show, and we were sitting there texting, and I was the only one, I'm telling the truth, I'm telling on myself, the only one that said, all right, let's get ready for 1-5-1, because this is done at this point. They are done. This game is over. And I was wrong. They found a way to come back, because when Sterling Shepard went up 21-10, even after Greg Ward scored on that 3-yard touchdown from Carson Wentz, no 2-point conversion, I'm like, oh, this is done. This is over. Let's wrap this one up. Let's get ready to react on a Friday with a lot of ticked off people because they did not win this game against the New York Giants, where many people thought that they would destroy that football team. They are bad. You are bad. But maybe you are a tad bit better than the New York Giants. It was an ugly win, but they got it done. They are now 2-4-1. So let's go over everything that happened last night. Of course, listening all day on the station today, as I look at a highlight right now, the throw to John Hightower was a great catch and a great throw from Carson Wentz to John Hightower along that right sideline. He looked it in, did not worry about the safety at that point, just caught that football, made sure he secured it on a 59-yarder from Carson Wentz. But let's go over the entire game here as we talk about things. Bear Brooks will join us at 8 o'clock to get his reaction. NBC Sports Philadelphia pre- and post-game show host, analyst, and he'll always give a great information about the game. We'll also give you our picks of the week, Tyler Zuli and I, at 9:10. And I suspect we have a pretty good week last week, and we'll give you the numbers again for this week. But looking at the game, all right, a lot, of course, to get into. And many people have talked about it throughout the day. A new audience, perhaps, tonight. Let's get ready to talk about what we saw last night. We saw two bad football teams go at it last night. As much as I said in that text chain that I have with Westbrook and D. Gunn, many times that I said to them, this is bad. This is a bad game. Two bad football teams. Jamie Lynch, my partner here on the Draft Line show, he just left. We just talked about two bad football teams. I asked him to give us one word for this division. Putrid is what Jamie said. So you all know at this point through 7 weeks where the Philadelphia Eagles are at 2-4-1. It's not good. It is not good. And that game last night was awful. Awful. Okay? Terrible, terrible, terrible was that game last night. It was terrible. It was terrible. But they got the win. All right, so let's go through it. They get the win last night. Carson Wentz, it always starts with the quarterback. Great opening drive. Looks like they're going to really put it on that team last night. Get off to a very good start. You take that 7-0 lead right away. And then Golden Tate comes right back and ties things up. So right there, you're like, all right, okay, that's fine. They'll buckle up. They'll tighten up these things. They'll tighten up the screws on some things that just got out of hand for them. No big deal. They come back in the second quarter. They go up 10-7. But they cannot really start. They really can't get things going. They can't seem to string things together to get this whole thing back on track and put it on this New York Giant team that, again, we assume they are better than, right? The offensive line for the Giants is not very good. The defensive line, if we're talking about matching up that way, I'm looking at this one and I'm saying they're a better football team. Pardon me, they're a better line grouping than the opposite side. They're going to dominate that offensive line. They're going to get to Daniel Jones. They're going to get to him and make things difficult. That's what's going to happen for the Philadelphia Eagles and their defense. They are going to set the tone. And already you've seen how Carson Wentz can go up and down the field. You can score. That's what I'm expecting. And then things really went away. We saw, again, NFC East football wrapped up into bad NFC East football with these two teams out there on the field. Just brutal. Well, Carson Wentz starts off very well, and then he goes in the opposite direction again, where he starts making these mistakes, and he's going that hero ball, the reverse pivot, that spin left to the left side, rolling across his body, trying to look to throw the football, and there's no way to go. There's nowhere to go. What is he doing as we're watching this whole thing play out? I'm wondering, Carson Wentz, what is going on? You're starting to revert back to your old ways. This is not a recipe to success for Carson Wentz in a Philadelphia Eagles offense. You're already playing with the poor offensive line because they're so banged up. The only starter out there is Jason Kelce. And you can say that Nate Herbig and Jordan Mailata are starters at this point with the amount of games and snaps that they've played thus far through 7 weeks. But my goodness, we know how poor it is. Where are the quick throws within this offense? Get the ball to Greg Ward. Find Travis Fulgham. Throw to Travis Boston Scott and Corey Clement out of the backfield. Get the ball out of your hands. Hit your tight end and Richard Rodgers and make sure you take care of yourself. We did not see that last night after that first score. It was ugly. It was really ugly. The quarterback play was terrible. The running game could not really get anything going, and it was just a defensive matchup at that point through two quarters. Then the Giants score at the 6:45 mark in the third quarter. That was a tough one as well with Wayne Gallman going into the end zone, because when you're looking at that particular situation where they go 14-10, you're just wondering, can the Birds find a way to stop this team on four plays? Folks, four plays right there for the New York Giants. That's when Daniel Jones gets tripped up by the 8-yard line because he's going so fast on his 81-yard run, I believe it was, yesterday in that quarter, that right there, you're saying to yourself, all right, he, the football gods, and he helped you out. They gave you a break right there by him not being able to keep his feet, right? Not being able to keep his feet as he is running down the field. They give up that touchdown to Gallman. Already Devonta Freeman is out. They go up 14-10. And now that momentum is starting to shift back to the New York Giants. The Birds can't get anything going in the fourth quarter when Sterling Shepard scores at 6:17. Already, you knew it was against them because the challenge, we're all looking at it on television saying, throw the flag, Doug. Throw the flag, because his knee was down. His knee was down. But they count it. Sterling Shepard gets into the end zone, 21-10. And I'm already looking at this and saying, this is a problem at this point for this football team. They can't score. They cannot generate any offense the right way. They cannot get any continuity on offense anymore. What is the problem here? He's now missing receivers. He can't get anything going. Then Greg Ward gets that touchdown less than 2 minutes later to make it 21-16. And they go for that 2-point conversion. And you understand, because you want to get to 18. If you get the ball back, the numbers tell you that if you cannot get into the end zone, at the very least, you can get a Jake Elliott field goal to tie it and send it into overtime, 21-21. Hopefully, you can win in that way. If not, this would be the second tie of the season for the Philadelphia Eagles. And by the way, we'll get to Jake Elliott, because my goodness, man, make a field goal. But then the improbable happens. The defense comes to play. Everything happens for Brandon Graham, gets the, you know, strip sack later on, secure the win. But before that, Boston Scott with an 18-yard pass from Carson Wentz, 2-point conversion, failed once again. They're at 22-21. Great throw from Wentz, great catch from Scott after of course, Jason Kelce, where they are at the 3-yard line, I believe it was, at the 3-yard line with a face mask penalty, back to the 19 for the Philadelphia Eagles, again, thinking they can't get into the end zone. There's no way they get into the end zone. How is this going to happen now? Again, the football guys are telling us now in a different way. This is not going to be a win. Let's get ready as I text the guys. 1-5-1 on the football season for the Philadelphia Eagles. But no, I was wrong. And man, am I glad I was wrong. Man, was I glad in the moment that I was wrong, because he finds Boston Scott along the right sideline. Once again, great throw. Great catch, 22-21. They get the victory. Fantastic. But there were some bad things that happened. The offensive line, they struggled yesterday. They did. Carson Wentz, he struggled early on after the first score to make it 7-0 Philadelphia. Right? The defense, albeit they played a decent enough game, we saw the big play from Daniel Jones on the big run. How did it open up so quickly for him to run as far as he did untouched? How did you look at Nickell Robey-Coleman and look at him and see him slow down? Basically quit on the play as Daniel Jones is running for an 80-yard run down the middle of the football field. The secondary, depleted as it is, where Cravon LeBlanc cannot keep up with Golden Tate for the score that they had in the second quarter. Not being able to call the right plays. A missed 29-yarder when the score is 10-7 going into halftime, looking to add to your lead to go up 13-7. Jake Elliott misses a 29-yarder for the Philadelphia Eagles. There were a lot of bad things that happened last night. There were a lot of good things that took place last night in the victory over the New York Giants. I thought that the Jalen Hurts stuff, from what we saw against Baltimore, was successful. Start to implement that a little bit more into the offense, especially with no Miles Sanders. Now I'm looking at it saying, even though we go game to game, all right, no more, because that doesn't work anymore. No more. Don't give him the ball anymore. Or if you're going to give him the ball, how about you give him the ball and take Carson Wentz off the field and allow something to develop with him, either as a runner or a quarterback, where you have an extra target for him and not your franchise quarterback on the outside. And Doug Peterson, the two-point conversions. Again with the two-point conversions. Yes, he is going to take chances. Yes, he is going to win those sometimes. Yes, they do work and they are exciting. But yes, they often don't work. They are unsuccessful, and it puts you in a bad spot where you're chasing points once again. Yes, it adds up the right way where you can still win the game or tie the game. I get it. But in the moment, as it is happening, it is so frustrating right now. They failed on two of them last night. It is very frustrating at this point with the two-point conversions. Can we please stop with the two-point conversions all of the time, as if that's the only thing you can do? I know the numbers tell you this. The paperwork, the analytics, the computers, they tell you one thing. Can we stop all the time with it? Can we please? It's becoming annoying at this point. I know he's going to mix them in sometimes, and I'm okay with that. I get a feel from sitting on my couch. He gets the feel in the moment, live action on the sideline. That's what matters most. But I disagree with him so often when he goes for these two-point conversions. This team is not as good as they were in the past, where those two-point conversions will happen often, and I feel good about it. The talent is not there. The play calling has not been that great either. He does some stuff where it's very good, and then he does some things that has all of us as Eagles observers scratching our heads when it comes to Doug Peterson and his play calling in general. I thought Fletcher Cox was good last night. Brandon Graham is just, he has been tremendous this season. I can only think of maybe one, two things that he's done poorly all season. Brandon Graham has been really good for the Philadelphia Eagles. Alex Singleton is turning out to be the best linebacker for the Birds right now through a couple of games after we saw him with the interception return touchdown against the San Francisco 49ers in their 25-20 win on that Sunday night. I like what I see from him. Darius Slay, outside of maybe one play here or there, still playing good football. Jordan Mailata looked human again yesterday for the Birds. But that doesn't stop me from thinking that he might have a chance to be a very good offensive lineman in this league because he has done too much good through the seven games for me to point a finger at him and say he is not worthy of playing outside on the left side. Boston Scott thought he was also good last night with the game-winning play at the end. Greg Ward, someone that we can count on, as Jamie talked about, very reliable, dependable. And Travis Fulgham, that guy is one of your three wide receivers going forward, in my opinion. So we have a lot to discuss, folks. 610-632-0975. Devon Givens with you on a winning football Friday. As the Birds win 22-21 over the New York Giants, they take over first place in the terrible NFC East. And I also want to ask, as we talk about the game, Barrett Brooks at 8 o'clock, 9-10, our weekly picks. This NFC East is terrible. And I see right now that D in Uptown wants to talk about the NFC, and I'm sure everyone else wants to just have their say about it. Give us tonight, as we go until 10 o'clock and we talk about the Birds, one word to describe the NFC East. We are already through 6 weeks, seven for the Birds and the Giants, but now we have to await the game between Washington and the Dallas Cowboys. One word to describe the NFC East through 7 weeks. All right? This whole thing is awful. 610-632-0975. We'll get to your phone calls when we get back. Guys, hang on. We'll get to you as soon as we return. We go until 10. Victory Friday. Birds in first place right here on the Fanatic.
Give me that phone. Devon Givens on 97.5. The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
The Fanatic. Victory Friday as we react to the Birds' win over the Giants. First place Birds, I should say, at 2-4-1. Sounds great, doesn't it? Not really. Football Friday on the Fanatic is driven by AAA. Wherever the open road takes you, take AAA to get to us to talk about the game last night. 610-632-0975. And we ask one word to describe the NFC East. Okay? Jamie said putrid. I'll go simple and say trash. We'll get Tyler Zuli with his word and the poll updates that we have so he can give you the poll questions that we have on 97.5 The Fanatic and the Twitter account. Join us on the phone, 610-632-0975. Your reaction to the victory over the New York Giants last night, 610-632-0975. Let's start things off on the phones with Rick on the cell here tonight, tipping things off on the Football Friday. What's up, Rick?
Yo, Devon, I didn't get a chance to call you and Jamie, but I ended up taking the Dolphins last week in the Survivor, so I was good.
Ooh, good. Okay, great.
I took the Eagles last night, sweat that out. That was fun.
Yeah, that was great. Looked like in the beginning, oh, this is going to be a rout, and then all of a sudden it changed.
I know, nothing like sweating it, but I'm through now. I got to fade the Chargers, so go Jacksonville. Anyway, have you ever seen a 6'5" quarterback or a 6'4" get so many balls batted down at the line of scrimmage?
It's very true. I mean, when you look at his windup and how the football comes out of his hand and where it comes out, remember they tried to change it a little bit when he first got here. Yep.
Yeah. It's just crazy. I'm going like, and I know the offensive line's bad, and that does play a little bit into it, but there's plenty of bad offensive lines on all the games that I watch every week. And I don't see, like, Drew Brees and Kyler Murray don't get balls batted down like this. And they're, you know, 5'10".
Right.
Like, you know, it's just, I find it weird as anything. What's your theory on the fact that when the Eagles, it's funny because I always feel like there's receivers open when you see replays. You know, he missed Fulgham on one earlier that Fulgham was open. I think he was trying to thread the pass into like
Jackson.
Can't remember who it was. It might have been Jackson. Yeah. It was somebody else.
It would have been a touchdown potentially for Travis Fulgham. Yes.
Like, part of me is like, Doug, what the heck are you doing on like literally maybe 30% of the plays? Then 30% of the plays is like, Carson, what the heck are you doing? And then, like, the other 40% is like, okay, this is just football. Like,
yeah.
I feel like that's every game.
No, I agree with you. The combination of them both and some of the ineptitude that we see out there on these game days where Carson will make some boneheaded hero play, try to make a hero play out there, and then Doug Peterson with the calls where we question those. I agree with you 100%, Rick. And the combination of them is frustrating. But then, you know, it's crazy because we've seen so much of success with them in terms of wins and plays and the play calling that is hard to do. And no one's perfect, we know. But we thought at this point, 5 years in with both of them, both year number five, that things would be so fluid. We wouldn't be having these questions anymore, these talking points at this point.
So I know you're obviously around here, so you watch Eagles. I'm sure you watch a decent amount of football. You know the plays at the goal line, whether they're 2-point conversions or whether they're at the goal line. You know, you get the eligible receiver, the eligible, you know, tackle, or you get the second tight end. Those guys are always open in every game I watch. They're wide open. The play works literally 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
The play they ran to Greg Ward on the touchdown. You know, it's just a simple up and out, and you can't, the defender cannot get to the goal line in order to stop that guy. So all it has to be is a good throw, which was a very good throw from Wentz, put it right on the numbers, and Ward got in.
Yep.
That play can work literally. I know I'm making it sound easier than it is, but that play works like 90% of the time.
Yeah, seems real simple, really simple.
Yeah, it's like real easy, and like I'm not writing X's and O's. I'm not Doug Peterson, but like, Isn't it sometimes that simple?
It would seem to be. And Rick, real quick, since we're going to start us off tonight, one word to describe the NFC East.
Mine is compassionate. They're very compassionate for all the other teams in the division.
For each one of
all the teams in the NFL.
All right, man. Appreciate it. Enjoy the NFL weekend without the Philadelphia Eagles, Rick.
Oh, dude, it'll be so relaxing.
I know.
No stress, Devon?
No stress. Oh, and then we have a Sunday night game next week, so we're all good, man. Thanks for the call, man. Appreciate it, Rick. Enjoy it. 610-632-0975. So, yeah, I mean, the frustration that comes with Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson, and we say because we're 5 years in. So when you talk about a tandem of head coach and quarterback being together for 5 years, there aren't many things that you pick at. They already won a Super Bowl. They've been in the playoffs the last three seasons. And you would think that, all right, even if they're without their talent overall at the skill positions, they're going to be okay because they've proven to us that they are a professional quarterback and a professional head coach. They know how to win in this league. Nobody's perfect, but man, the mistakes are so glaring and the mistakes are so often each week we have something different to say. A D, did you see this one, this particular one? No, but Mike will say, hey, no, I saw this one. Steve will say, no, Tyler, I saw this one. Because there's so many things from those two alone that we point out in these games. Yet and still, guys, they won last night 22-21 because they are a bad football team. The Giants are a bad football team. Someone had to win or tie And to the credit of the Eagles, they found a way to come back. And to that point, Carson Wentz was tremendous down the stretch where he had to go into his two-minute offense, got the ball at like 1:55 on the clock in the fourth quarter, and he drove them down, and he got them the game-winning touchdown. So you see what I'm saying? You see what Rick is talking about? All of these frustrating things? All these frustrating things. I mean, this is just wild. 610-632-0975. One word also when you call in to talk about the game and the team to describe the NFC East. D in Uptown next with us here on The Fanatic. What's going on, D? How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. I'm a little frustrated because I realized we paid this guy, Roby Coleman, all this money, and he has shown no effort for the entire 7 weeks we've been here.
Top five slot corner in the league.
And he has shown zero effort the entire time he's been here. I don't understand. You're supposed to be one of the fastest corners on our team, and you let Daniel Jones just run down the field. Right past you.
And then slowed up.
And then give up.
Yeah.
And then give up. I don't understand it. It's killing me. That was my main frustration yesterday. I always have faith with Carson because I always know he just doesn't quit. So I always have faith that there's always a chance.
That is true. He should have ran off the sideline and tried to catch Daniel Jones since he decided to quit.
I guess my other thing is I'm trying to look at this season since the injury started. And I think as the Eagles fans, I think we all had to do it. We had to look at the season for what it is. We got a season where we've had, I don't think there's been a single game this season where the O-line that started the game has finished the game.
Every
single game this year, we haven't had our starting O-line. Whoever started didn't finish. There's always been some different variation. We literally have guys we had a ROTC teacher has taken snaps 2 weeks in a row.
Terrible.
That shouldn't happen. But that's what it is. But we are finding out that we have guys who had the potential to be here long term. We have probably one of the oldest lines in the league, and then we're finding out that we have guys that can potentially take their spot. Like, I'm looking forward to me. I hate to say it in week seven, but I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next year in training camp between Lamont and Dillard, or how somehow it's going to work fighting with Herbig for a spot. Or how Driscoll is going to step up. Could he play tackle? Could he play right guard next to Lane next year? Like, there's so many different things that's there, and I'm just trying to look at the positive of it. Like, we know we got a bad football team this year. We're probably one of the most injured teams in the league right now, to be honest. But when you look at the positives.
You try to look at the positives, and you look at the positives within the game too, D, and then all of a sudden the negatives pop up for you in game, where they'll make some boneheaded situation happen.
We know what we got. I think when the reporter asked us today about the comparison with Carson and Brett Favre, mm-hmm. that was his comp coming out. He was a gunslinger. So we got to take, you got to take the good with the bad.
Yeah, but his bad yesterday was really bad when he started throwing the ball the way that he was across his body.
Across the body.
Oh, my goodness.
The crazy part is he threw it across the body, and it was still catchable. It hit Fulgham in both hands.
Yeah. Yeah. But Fulgham kind of went on the defense because the defender was right there. And if Fulgham wasn't there to be able to knock that one down, I know he was trying to catch it, and the defender, they both knocked it out of each other's hands at that point. That was going to be a bad one. It could have been going the other way, for real, D. And he has to, I know we have to take, he's going to take his chances, but sometimes it's just too much for you while you're watching the game. So give us one word.
I mean, with the people that's out there, and this is my last thing, now I'll give out one word. With the people that's out there, he's going to have to take chances.
Like, yeah, I hear you. Yeah, but not like that, though. Take some chances, but that one you always know that they always tell you that's a no-no.
Darn, one word.
Yes, one word for the NFC East.
Right, that trash. Horrendous.
Let's go with horrendous. D, thanks for the call, man. Enjoy the weekend. They are horrendous. The NFC is a horrendous division. The worst in football. 610-632-0975. We have Mike and Scott and Steve. We actually have a couple open phone lines and people dropped off. So you want to fill those up. 610-632-0975. Tyler Zuli, good evening, my man. What's your one word for the birds so far through seven games and more so the NFC East?
I think it's the same. And maybe it's not the same for both, but my word more so for the NFC East than anything else is historic. And that's not a good thing. You know, oftentimes you think of historic, you automatically think that it's, you know, something that mm-hmm. is of significant value and it's of its importance. Historic in this sense is that it's historically bad, but I'm not going to use two words, so I'll use the word historic. This division is putrid. It's gross. It's disgusting. We've heard a lot of words tonight. I know we'll get more as the night goes on. I mean, this division is going to be won by a team that is under 500, almost assuredly, is going to be won probably by, at best, tied for the worst division record of all time to win the division, and more likely is going to break the record for the worst division winning record in NFL history, since they went to mm-hmm. 16 games.
Mm-hmm. Terrible. Terrible. All right. Give us
and not one of the teams are out of it, by the way.
I know. Everybody's available. The Twitter poll. You have some Twitter polls up there for us?
So we're actually going to revisit a Twitter poll that we put up a couple weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of stems from that conversation that you and I just had. So we can't retweet a poll with a poll, but we will retweet the initial poll to discuss it. And that question is, how many wins is it going to take to win the NFC East? And when we started it, it was 10. Actually, I think it was, I'll go back and we will retweet it, so I'll give you the exact. But I think it was 11. It was 10 or more, 9, 8, or 7. And it's to the point now where I think that we can probably rephrase it. Is it 9, 8, 7, 6?
Or less, yeah.
That's bad, man.
That is bad, man. So listen, just, he'll retweet it, 97.5 The Fanatic. Go check it out. Barrett Brooks will join us from NBC Sports Philadelphia at 8 o'clock. 610-632-0975. Devon Givens hanging out with you until 10. We'll get Tyler's thoughts on the game itself. The Birds being in a division, 9-10. Our weekly selections where I think we have a pretty good record. Let's go to Mike in Creekside next on the Fanatic. Mike.
I didn't start feeling bad until the fourth quarter, and the one thing that Doug did do right, one of the very few things, it was less than five, was when you were down on their own goal line and they tried to run Carson for a touchdown, he didn't make it, and they had the Giants pinned back, and the defense came up at that point in time to have their worst possible series of the game. Because Doug had done right. We got them pinned down here. Our defense has been playing good.
Yep.
We can hold them. We can go right back in and score.
Mm-hmm.
And then the defense just let them march 98 yards for a touchdown.
Yeah, they went for it on fourth down. Then they go 97 yards for the score, the one set mm-hmm. up. And it was just awful, awful to make it 21-10 to Sterling Shepard on that score.
And I didn't
like that call right there when he went for it. Not that he went for it. It was the play call again that he couldn't come up with something better. Remember Mike last week when he said with the two-point conversions he ran out of plays for the two-point conversion? Did this happen again yesterday?
Yes, and that brings me to my second point. Now, we know we've been having a lot of trouble with the the place kicker?
Oh, Elliot.
Elliot. I know they got practice, but they've been going for so too many 2 points conversion, is he not getting enough
work
practice on the field?
They still practice during the week. And Mike, that was a 29-yard field goal attempt.
Yeah.
So, that was an somehow, extra point.
But somehow or another, you know, it's like a batter getting warmed up or a pitcher getting the chance.
I got you. Yeah.
You know, and I figured maybe that's hurting him, you know. But like I said, and it'll just let me go to my situation. The only thing I can think of is coaching.
Listen, he has plenty of time where he comes pregame, gets his work in to see what his range is on a game day, see where the wind is at night. Last night was a nice night in Philadelphia, so that wasn't going to be a problem. And again, Mike, that was a cheap shot, so I get it in terms of the work. Maybe you can say that for when he attempts the longer field goals, like his 57-yarder in Pittsburgh. Maybe you can lean on that one and say, but not for a 29-yarder. Where am I going to give him an out of not enough work because they're constantly going for these 2 points?
Okay. What about the holder? I mean, the one thing is a holder getting the laces down right? We can't see that.
Yeah, his punter, Johnson, has been fine.
So the holding is not an
issue. Nope. He hooked it. He just kicked it left, went too far. And it was just ridiculous, man. So you see how bad the NFC East is, Mike, right? So one word to describe the NFC East.
Well, I can't. The only thing I can think of is going to have to be two words, bad coaching.
Well, that is true. And for each team, man, thanks so much for the phone call. 610-632-0975. Steve in Newtown next on the Fanatic. Steve.
Hey, how you doing, Devon?
Good, Steve. How are you? They got the win.
I just wanted to talk about Doug Peterson and kind of stick up for the guy because, I mean, look at his roster, number one. Look how the team's buying in. And look how, you know, I mean, if you look at the roster, compare it to the Jets. I mean, if I were saying, the league did it, you didn't play one game, I would say the Jets are going to destroy this team. But they have Carson Wentz, who's a force multiplier, who's taking this team, and we're winning games against far superior teams. And no coach in the NFL is doing that right now. I mean, you could say Bill Belichick did it a couple of years ago, but, I mean, you got to give the guy some credit as a head coach, not as a play caller.
How much, though?
How much but credit?
Listen, they always play hard for him, right, Steve? So you give him that for sure. They always make sure they play hard for him. You always hear that he's a great motivator where they get ready to go again for Doug Peterson. But we can't ignore the head coach and the coordinator part because he wants both. He wants both on a game day. So if he's going to have both on a game day, then we have to call it for what it is when he does not do well.
You're right, but I want to say one thing about everyone that wants these creative plays. I mean, you got these plug-in roster that hasn't been together for a week. You know, there's always new parts. I mean, one screw-up, if you try to put these, like, exotic plays in, and the other team's going to take one to the house. Like, I just, it's hard to be a coach, you know. And if I were an athlete or coach in Philly, I'd probably run.
But I agree with you that it's difficult when you have the personnel in and out and you have no continuity. However, the one thing we do know, especially when your offensive line is depleted, even when they're healthy, that Carson Wentz is not the greatest of pocket passers. So have him on the move from time to time. So that is one thing that he can incorporate. It may not be every play. You cannot do that. But mix some of those things in. You have some speed on your roster. Do that. Those other, like, look, they go for these wide receiver screens. That's about the most creativity they have. And they don't work anymore, Steve.
They
don't work. The tight end screens, they don't work. Brian Westbrook and LeSean McCoy were the last ones to have success as a screen, or maybe Darren Sproles when he was healthy. Darren Sproles also as a running back out of the backfield to execute a screen. That doesn't work. So they have to find other ways to do things, and you know they're forcing it with Jalen Hurts because they want to justify that selection in the second round. So that's on them when it comes to it. And if we're calling for it, it's because the offense has been stagnant. They need to do something differently.
A lot of that has to do with personnel and how he rose.
Well, that would go upstairs, yes.
But, you know, I don't even want to get into it. We don't have time.
No.
But he should be held to the standard as Klintak. You know, I don't know why we're not talking about him more.
Well, because he won that Super Bowl, so I think that's where it goes. But, Steve, we are up against it, man. Can you give us a word for the NFC East?
Embarrassing.
Mm. And you're absolutely right. Have a great weekend, man.
You too, buddy.
You got it, Steve. Thanks, man. 610-632-0975. Scott, Mike, Dave, Mark, and everybody else will get to you. Barrett Brooks, NBC Sports Philadelphia. He will join us as well for a few minutes to analyze the game, as he always does during the pre- and post-game shows. We'll come right back. We'll take your phone calls. Barrett Brooks as well, right here, 97.5 The Fanatic.
Give me that phone. Javon Givens on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
The Fanatic, broadcasting from the Xfinity studio, only from Comcast. 610-632-0975. Birds get the win last night, and they are in first place. Didn't see it coming. After the 21-10 score, Sterling Shepard in the end zone, Giants go 97 yards, and they put it right on the Birds, and I'm sitting there shaking my head and texting, saying 1-5-1. Let's get ready. I was wrong. They came back. I'm surprised, but they are in first place. What were your thoughts from last night? 610-632-0975. And the NFC East, we know it's terrible. So far, we've gotten compassion. Horrendous. Historic from Tyler Zuli, and embarrassing from our last phone call. Where do you guys stand? One word to describe the NFC East. 610-632-0975. Let's go to the phones before we get to Barrett. Let's go to Mike in Westmont here on the Fanatic. Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm doing good. I had a couple points. First one is Jake Elliott's thing. That's all I have to say about that.
Yo, he misses so many, doesn't he?
It's great. He used to be fantastic. I don't know what's going on. He's in his own head. Second one is, I was listening to Colin Cowherd today, who actually had really positive things to say about Carson Wentz, which was surprising. He said, basically, you know, any other quarterback, if he had had his team at, you know, led his team to that victory, given what he had on the field, everybody would just be lauding him, like, if it was, you know, yeah, it would be, if it was anybody else. It was
I think I saw that clip that you're speaking of.
Yeah, and then he went on, he was talking about Baker Mayfield and just saying how he crumbles under the pressure and he has no pocket presence and he can't handle any kind of pressure at all and he's got all kinds of weapons around him. And he was like, you know, if that were Carson Wentz, like, he can't handle that kind of, like, Carson Wentz can handle that kind of pressure. Carson Wentz is dealing with it and battling through it and leading his team to victories, and this guy is just not there. And I'm surprised by that. It was nice to hear, actually, for once.
Yeah, and it's crazy because he kind of, I'm not going to say attacked him, but he said some things a few weeks ago after one of the other losses about Carson Wentz, and most people, Eagle fans, were a little frustrated with that. So, you know how this thing goes, man. It's up and down. There's so much. I mean, we played an audio clip as well, Mike, from Keyshawn Johnson from his morning show with Zubin and Jay Will, where he was saying that Carson Wentz was to blame because the quarterback gets all the attention when they are winning, and you get attacked when you lose. So that's the nature of the position, as we all know.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, like, if we're harder than other people are on their quarterbacks. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's tough to say because we've never lived in those places. So yeah. We don't know, but we know we are always harder on our quarterbacks. And the most popular one of the quarterbacks is always the backup.
True.
Very true.
Third point, I'll make it real fast. I think it was Darius Slay, and I think it was Slayton. And I watched Darius Slay run up to the line, like kind of like get his, you know, run up the line of scrimmage. And then he backpedaled for what felt like 15 yards. And then Slayton he backpedaled behind the, you know, the first down marker. And then Slayton caught a screen or whatever it was. And he got it like the first down. So I'm just so sick of the sticks or the prevent or whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
I don't see it when I'm watching other teams. I don't see other teams do this. And I'm just sick of it. Like, they get first downs on us so easily.
It's really frustrating. Mike, I see it from time to time. And can you give us a word, man?
Sad.
It definitely is sad. No question. Mike, thanks for the call, man. I have seen other defenses play that prevent defense. I mean, think about it. When you play Madden, they actually have the prevent defense out there. So I've seen it before, Mike. It's just that when we've seen it from other teams, I speak for myself, when I don't know what Dave and Mark and Tyler and others think about this. The prevent defense, it seems like it works more for other teams in their favor than it does for the Philadelphia Eagles. And I don't mean that they don't get burned, because other teams do get burned by it. Right? It did not become popular, the term it prevents you from winning, just from the Philadelphia Eagles. It became popular because it's the prevent defense, and it became popular because it prevents every team from winning when you allow them to just go up and down the field so easily and get anything that they want. So, Mike, I hear you. And it is really bad. It really is. And you said sad. That's a great word for the NFC East. It's really bad that Jim Schwartz just continues to have that sticks defense out there for the birds towards the end of these games. The secondary is just not good enough for that right now. And you know they're trying to get the ball out very quickly, so the defensive line, while they may have some success, now they're getting tired and rushing the quarterback because they're in this up-tempo defense. You're playing a sticks defense. They're allowing 10, 15 yards a pop. Your rotation, yeah, you can try to get guys in there, but then you're going to get caught possibly with 12 men on the field. They have to be better down the stretch. Have to be better. Brandon Graham was tremendous with that strip sack. He's been playing very, very good this season. 610-632-0975. Mark in Bechtelsville here on the Fanatic. What's up, Mark?
Hey, how you guys doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for making it.
First, I want to say I'm happy about the Birds win. But there's something I noticed in the game yesterday. One, it's too predictable, the scheming that Doug Peterson does. And it frustrates me. And then him in the red zone with Jalen Hurts in a 2-point conversion. I like Jalen Hurts. I always thought he was good at Alabama and Oklahoma. I wish kid the best. But you have a 6'5 quarterback. You tell me you can't go into the center and try to get a halfback in there or try for a sneak or some type of push? I just don't get it. Why do these read options? Why do these wild, like, these option plays and this weird stuff? I have not seen this before, ever. Maybe at the college level, but this is pros. This is not college.
Well, you know what I mean? We see it in the pros a lot more, Mark. That's just part of the game right now. But with it having minimal success thus far, he's going too far with trying to force it so often. When maybe it's not necessarily needed at that point for this football team. This is where we also get into, Mark, the conversation that we had in the offseason. You need an extra back, right? You need an extra back. Yeah. You need a bigger back. So when we were talking about Carlos Hyde and we were speaking about Devonta Freeman or even drafting other players, J.K. Dobbins, Cam Ayers, maybe not necessarily a bigger back, but someone to spell for Miles Sanders. And Boston Scott looked good yesterday, but on the ground, you know, you weren't getting much. You weren't getting much. Yesterday, 12 carries for Boston Scott, 46 yards. The long that he had was a 12-yard run. Jason Huntley came in, got a 10-yard run. Corey Clement only 2 for 9. So it's just, they needed more help from the running back position. They did not address it well enough in the offseason. And now that you have taken Hurts, Mark, you have to make sure that you put him out there on the field and try to justify your pick of him in the 2020 draft.
Okay. And you are absolutely right. And there's one other thing I want to hit on. The two hits in Deshaun Jackson. I worked at 3:30 this morning, so I stayed up the whole night watching this game.
Yeah.
And then went to work. And actually, my work now again after pointing from 3:30 to 4:30 today.
Wow. Make that money.
And, but I actually thought the flag was to be the late hit on
for the second
Jackson
hit. I agree. I don't know how they missed that. He's gonna get fined. They're gonna look at that tape, and if the Eagles haven't sent that in there, Mark, then that's a bad job by them by not sending that to the league of what the officials missed on the second one, and now he's out with a high ankle sprain for multiple weeks because of a dirty play. And remember, the player who hit him the second time, Mark, that was the one that got crazy with Greg Ward after the touchdown and got the 15-yard personal foul. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. And here's my question. Should they implement the rule of 2 unsportsmanlike and you're automatically ejected like college does?
They do. They eject people. I've seen somebody ejected already this season in the NFL. So, yeah, I've seen it. Mark, give us a word to best describe the NFC East right now.
Fictitious. It doesn't seem real.
Thanks for the call, man. Enjoy your night at work. Thank you, man. Really appreciate it. 610-632-0975. All right. We are joined on the Comcast Business Hotline by our friend from NBC Sports Philadelphia, pre, post, quick slant. He does it all, played in the league, won a Super Bowl. He joins us every Thursday, but because of a Thursday night game, he was kind enough to share, spend some time with us on a Friday night. And again, on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast, Bear Brooks. What's up, B. Brooks?
What's up, bro? How's it going today, man?
Oh, it's going, man. They got a victory last night, 22-21, but they made us sweat.
No question, you know. And can you imagine me sitting inside that newsroom watching this game, and with 6 minutes left on the clock, we are down 21-10. I was, you know, pissed to the highest. I can't believe that we're playing against the Giants and we play that bad. I'm so disappointed.
Yeah. So when Sterling Shepard went and scored that ball, 21-10, you did not have the opportunity to challenge because Doug apparently didn't get the flag out quick enough. I sat there and I'm saying 1-5-1. This is what it's going to be. But they found a way to come back, and they did so, B. Brooks, on the shoulders of Carson Wentz. Struggled early, but really came back to life at the end. What did you think of his play down the stretch with those two scoring drives? One to, of course, Greg Ward, and then the game winner to Boston Scott.
Well, first of all, can we go back and talk about them not going out and throwing the challenge flag? That situation right there, regardless of what they say up top, they should have thrown the flag, period, point blank. What is it? Was it like second or third down? They're going in. They should have challenged the spot, period, point blank. That should have been done. But then number two, at this point, Carson is at a point in his career where he has that clutch gene. There's no question about that. He has that clutch gene. But he works well in a frenetic type of zone. He's not a guy that's going to sit back and drop back in the court in the pocket and throw the ball on time, get the ball out. He's not that type of guy. He needs to be moving around. He needs organized chaos to be successful. He plays well in those type of conditions, and we need to really put him in those type of conditions in which he plays, you know, at a higher level at. And you know, we talked about it on the post game show. You have to call plays in which you let him use his athletic talent to get out there and run around and put a team on his shoulders and play that way.
Why don't we see Doug Peterson call more things for him, move him out of the pocket, have him on the run a bit where he is very successful and accurate?
Well, it's more so, I think, where they don't trust the fact that they his health being an issue. And I'm like, well, it doesn't matter. At this point, I talked to Randall Cunningham when I played with him. He got hurt more when he was in the pocket. And I think Carson's the same way. Carson needs to get out and really be a guy that's going to work off his instincts. Go out there, because, I mean, he that's when he throws the best balls. Those are the times in which he runs the offense more efficiently. When you make him just sit in the pocket, he just doesn't do as well. It seems like the first quarter, when he goes down, scores in the first quarter, you know, that's when he's at his best, trying to get everybody to get accustomed to his style. And then in the fourth quarter, when the game's on the line, that second or third quarter is where he's not playing up to the expectations that I have for him. And that's basically what it is, and most Philly fans are. We want him to play up to the expectations. We've seen him play before. And when he doesn't play up to those expectations, that's when we have a problem with his play.
No, no question. And we saw the good and the bad of Carson Wentz last night, but he found a way to get it done. So as you said, Barrett Brooks joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast. Jump back as we talk about those two plays at the end where he helped win the game.
Well, I mean, it was just one of those things where they executed the play the right way. He went out and made something happen. And he was, you know, Boston Scott was not the primary on that play. You know, and, you know, to be all honest, when they got the holding penalty and they pushed him back 17 yards, I said, this is the best situation you could have put Carson in because he has more room to work with the field. He doesn't do well with making touch passes in the small areas, small windows. You know, when he throws the ball out to the running back in the flat, those aren't the plays that he really excels in. He excels in being out there and really putting the ball where it's not supposed to be. You know, he's more comfortable in situations where you allow him to be instinctual. And the ball that Boston Scott was just on the one. All the balls he, you know, the ball he got to the tight end, you know, those are all situations where he was out there using his athletic talent, being in a situation where he can go out and maximize his athletic talent. Mm-hmm. We got to get him in more rollout situations, waggle protections. Waggle protections are play-action protections where they pull the guard on the outside as an escort to really help him get the ball down the field and press the defense, put pressure on the defense. That's when he feels most comfortable as a quarterback.
Barrett Brooks joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast. B, I mean, the defense came to play as well down the stretch where you saw Brandon Graham once again, man, make a big play and help secure the win for the team.
Absolutely. You know, the guys up front, you usually say that the guys up front make the guys in the tail end look better. I really think that they played more closely on the wide receivers. They pressed them a little more, which allowed the guys up front, the defensive linemen, to really make an impact on the game because it wasn't a quick pass. He couldn't get the ball out fast because those guys are covering at a tighter, tighter presence on the wide receivers, mm-hmm. which gives the opportunity now to make something happen with the quarterback. You know, and it really affected how Jones played in the game. You know, those are all entangled. And I think Sports saw something this week in which he allowed them guys to go out there and blitz a little more to put a little pressure on the young quarterback. And, you know, and that's what made the difference on how those guys played. They didn't want to blitz, a guy like Jackson with the Ravens because they thought he could run around and make plays. But, you know, against Daniel Jones, they felt as though, yes, we could do that and put ourselves in a better position. We need to blitz everybody and put ourselves in a better position to just go out there and just ball. Impose your will on offenses. That's what we need to do, man.
Yeah, I agree. But we know that Jim Schwartz is just not going to dial him up like that. We know that.
We saw it, though. We saw it. So since we saw it, we need to go out there and do it and execute it. Say what you want to say. Our corners can cover. You know, all right, Cravon LeBlanc got beat a little bit, but he was playing tight on receivers. And I'll take that him going out there and competing it against a guy like Golden Tate as opposed to getting beat over the top where he wasn't even around the guy. Give me a situation where he got out there contesting the pass as opposed to this guy running wide open and free. That's what we need. I need contested ball as opposed to guys running wide open.
And before we get to the next game against the Dallas Cowboys, of course, the Birds have some time off. I wanted to ask you about the offensive line, man. So much going on, right, with the offensive line. So many things. Now Lane Johnson going to be out again, this time with the knee. How did you assess their work last night in front of Carson Wentz with Jordan Mailata all the way over to the right side with Lane Johnson and then eventually Matt Pryor?
Well, Matt Pryor went out there, and he played well enough to win the game. But he's going to have to get some reps at the first team and play there consistently for me to say, all right, I'm going to give him a thumbs up. Opeta, this is his first start really being an NFL starter. And I think that he played just okay. You know, he got beat a couple times, but that just comes with a young guy being out there for the first time with live bullets. You know, he played in the preseason where, you know, he had the opportunity to go out there and play. But it's totally different when you're going into the season and having the opportunity to play against guys that really are starters. You know, you play against guys that are trying to make the team when you play in the preseason. But when you're playing against starters like, you know, he was this year as opposed to last year against preseason, mm-hmm. it really steps the game up. You know, things go a lot faster. Your reads are a lot faster. The calls are a lot faster. And you got to get accustomed to the speed of the game. I think he'll play a lot better, you know, this week as opposed to he did last week. He should be the starter right now at the left guard position. I'm comfortable with him being there because he'll learn a lot. And, you know, the offensive line coach will get him ready for the Dallas Cowboys. But, you know, it's just one of those things where they have to learn in order for them to take that next step in the progression of being a player in the NFL.
All right, and finally, man, again, they're in first place, 2-4-1, which is ridiculous at this point.
Can you believe that?
No, I cannot believe that. I cannot. They have the Dallas Cowboys next Sunday. They get some extra time off. Dallas plays Washington this weekend. I mean, I know we're a ways away, and we'll talk to you on Thursday to kind of get things going. But just to look ahead a little bit, right now, man, what number would you guess would win this division?
At this point, I'm really thinking that 7 wins will win the division.
Wow.
I mean, this is the battle of the least. And, you know, I mean, it just goes to show. The NFC East is at a point where it used to be just like the NFC West. You know, when I was playing, that's what the NFC West looked like. And the NFC East was actually, Arizona was in our conference back
then. Yeah, I remember
that. Back then.
Yeah.
They were in our division. But at this point, it doesn't matter. You know,
Jake Plummer.
Playing better. You know, so let's just take the reins. Because when you get in the playoffs, everybody's record is 0-0. Nobody has any wins. And if you get hot, there's no telling what you could do. So let's just get to the playoffs, you know. I'm not trying to hear everybody talking about, oh, you know, we're going to get in, we're going to get beat by the NFC teams, you know. I'm not trying to hear that. Once you get into the playoffs, everybody records the same. Hopefully we get a little healthier going into the playoffs if we do win the division. And there's ample opportunity for anybody to win. It's any given Sunday is what everybody's been saying for the past, you know, 10 years. So any given Sunday, the Eagles have a shot because they have the same record as everybody else going into the playoffs. So let's just get there first. Let's just win the division, get there first.
That's right. Get there first and see what happens, man. You had me thinking back when you said the Arizona Cardinals being in the division. I was thinking about Jake Plummer on those teams.
Eric Swan. Aeneas Williams. You know, there was a lot of players on that team. That was a good team. Seth Joyner was on that team.
Yeah.
Clyde Simmons was on that team.
How about that?
You know, Simeon Rice. There were a lot of players on that team. They had a pretty good defense. Offensively, they were pretty bad. But defensively, they had some guys that could go out there and play.
Was Thomas Jones on one of them? Remember running back from Virginia? Was it Thomas Jones? Number 20?
Yeah, Thomas Jones. He wasn't on those teams.
Okay.
No.
All right.
But they did have Pat Tillman. Remember the guy?
Pat Tillman. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, so their defense was pretty good. Offensively, they couldn't do anything, man. Jake the Snake wasn't worth his salt. Wasn't worth the taste of salt, you know, in the Badlands. But, yeah, you know, we used to beat up on him a little bit.
Yeah, it was every now and then he would come here and get the best of the Eagles, and it was always frustrating.
I know, man.
Hey, B, listen, man, enjoy your weekend. You have your weekend off?
Oh, no question. Can you believe I'll be able to watch all of Saturday college football, but I'll be able to watch all the games on Sunday. This is going to be new. In fact, I'm going to find me a couple wings. You know, you're more than welcome to come by, grab some of these wings, I'm man. I'm going to do it up, man, this weekend. This all is right. My first time in a long time.
All right, well, maybe I'll hit you up and we'll do that. And if not, we also have a bye week coming up, so I might swing through then.
Hey, no, absolutely, man. You my dog. We'll make it happen, man.
Always, bro. Enjoy the weekend, man. You got it. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Barrett Brooks on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast. All right, guys. Thanks for hanging on. Dave, you specifically really appreciate it. We get to you when you get back. And Jack and Brian and everyone else, 610-632-0975. Thomas Jones with Arizona from 2000 to 2002. Wow, seemed like he was there longer than that. He was a good running back.
He spent a lot of time with the Bears.
Yeah, he did. He did. I think that was a trade after that, but he was a good running back. So we'll get to the phone, 610-632-0975. When we get back, thanks to Barrett Brooks, Tyler Zuli's producing. I'm Devon Gibbons. We run till 10, 9-10. Weekly selections for the NFL here on the Fanatic.
Give me that phone. Devon Gibbons. 97.5, the Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5, The Fanatic.
The Fanatic. 610-632-0975. Devon Givens with you until 10. 9-10. We check in with Tyler Zuli. And we give our weekly selections in the NFL. I can't wait to see what the numbers are because we do this and I don't keep track of the numbers like I should when we watch these games on Sunday. And we've been doing pretty good all the way dating back to last week. Tyler has the black book in his possession. So we'll get that when we get back, 610-632-0975. Let's go back to the phones as promised. Dave in Center City, thanks for hanging on, Dave. Really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. What's shaking, guy?
Oh, man. Hey, you know, a 2-4-1 team in first place. No big deal.
Life is good. 2-4-1 with a winning percentage of .363. 2-5 against the spread. And their only pro bowler is their punter, Cameron Johnston. Life is very good.
It is very good.
My question to you. And by the way, Barrett Brooks is correct with the up-tempo for Carson. But right now, with this patchwork, practice squad, offensive line, they're not in any type of game day shape. We can't run up tempo for a sustained period of time. It's a shame.
No, it doesn't have to be all game, but of course incorporate it at where it can be problematic and you don't allow the team to stay on the field with their defense and now they're gassed, all of that stuff.
Logic suggests when the Eagles get healthy, okay, they're going to start stringing wins together. Mm-hmm. But logic also suggests that all three of those teams are not going to finish 4-12. In your estimation, out of those three teams, who can get hot?
Wow.
That's not a trick question.
I who could get hot? I guess I would say the Eagles or the Cowboys still. And the Giants are not even out of it. But I would say the Eagles or the Giants are the ones that could get hot. But I look at the Eagles' schedule, and I know what's in front of them, and it's going to be very difficult. So that just means what number, right, Dave, is going to win this division. So what does hot mean?
Well, you said I said the Eagles will pull away. Okay, when they get healthy. I asked you the three remaining teams. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you believe the Giants are going to put something together because they're not going to finish 4-12, all three of those teams.
Correct.
Devon.
Right.
Okay, so you think the Giants, so that game against the Giants in 2 weeks is going to be big.
That game against the Giants is going to be very important. These three games in general, Giants, Cowboys, Giants, very important. They could be 4-4-1 And then we are looking at a situation where going into those other games against Cleveland and Green Bay, New Orleans, Seattle, where you have to, Arizona, where you have to find a way to steal a couple of those to get to that number that you're speaking of.
Yeah, but this 6-7 wins, the Eagles are going to finish with 9 or 10 wins, believe me. You know I am not a fan of the NFC. I am not scared of the Green Bay Packers, the New Orleans Saints, and the Seattle Seahawks. I believe the tough part of the schedule is over, my friend.
Really?
You know, you had Baltimore. You had Pittsburgh. You had the Rams. But let me tell you something. The AFC East isn't that much better than the NFC East. So my word is competitive for the NFC East. You have a good night, my brother.
You as well. Thank you. Appreciate it. Competitive is a good one for this one right here. Let's go with competitive for, I mean, listen, they are not competitive. They're competitive the other way. That's why it's a good one.
Well, they're competitive amongst themselves.
Are they?
I think so.
Really?
Yeah, because competition doesn't necessarily have to be good. We think of competitive thinking that it means, you know, we use that term almost saying like it's, you know, like a really hard-fought battle that ends with a bunch of good teams, right? Like the AFC North is what we would call competitive. But competition doesn't have to be good. Competition just has to be close. It is competitive.
All right. Competitive the other way. Brian in Plymouth Meeting. What's up, B?
Well, this isn't the phrase I was going to use, but if you're going to go competitive, then I would say bum fight. But, oh, man. This game was dreadful last night.
B, I was sitting there last night, and I'm like, this is awful football. Awful.
I mean, just any win over the Giants. Props the other night for recognizing the Giants are our rival, not the Cowboys.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
I got a question. Did they change the rule where you can't challenge pass interference anymore because it was such a disaster last year?
I don't know. That might be the case. I'm not sure.
Because, you know, I was all worked up about the play against the Steelers, and then last night they had, I guess it was it the play before the field goal where the guy clearly got, no, it wasn't that. But there was that play in down in the end zone where they clearly pass interference and they didn't even try to challenge it. I mean, it was the fourth, when they went for it on fourth down inside the five.
No, I hear you, man. It's, seriously, the pass interference thing there with, and you're talking about, what's his name? The tight end, the converted tight end that they threw at yesterday. Oh, man. Hakeem Butler, right?
Yeah, sounds right. I think it was 31, maybe.
89, I think his number was. And
Well,
I'm talking about offense. I'm talking about offense. I know what you were talking about with defense. 31 is Roby Coleman. And I'm speaking about offensively where they go Hakeem Butler. That was pass interference. And to your point of challenging, it's like, I know he's only Hakeem Butler and you just activated him, but doesn't he get that call?
I you would think. I mean, refereeing is just, in all sports, it's just such a bad state.
I know.
But, you know, and it's just, it kind of goes with like the theme that I've been talking about with Doug, where he just doesn't seem to think on his feet very well. You know, even if there's a 20% chance that gets overturned, it was such a huge play because it's, you know, a difference between a first and goal and giving them the ball. I mean, you got to roll the dice there if you're allowed to. So
yeah, no question.
And so the phrase I was going to use for the NFC East is "dirty diapers."
You're going clean there. Well, not clean, but you're going clean there for it because you're absolutely right. It is that bad.
It's pretty funky.
Yeah, it is, man. Hey, B, enjoy the weekend, man. Enjoy the game.
Yeah, have a great weekend.
You as well, man. 610-632-0975. Dirty diapers. Before we get to Jack and Doug, on the phones. A couple open phone lines. 610-632-0975. You want to do a Twitter poll update for there, Tyler Zuli? Tyler put up Twitter poll for this Friday night. Football Friday, a reaction Friday off of a win. We'll get to the NBA later as well. So, Tyler, what you got?
Yeah, so we kind of brought back an old question that we had posed before the season started and kind of modified it because, as Brian said, the division is dirty diapers. So the question is, we ask you again after the Eagles' second win of the season and the division being terrible, how many wins will it take to win the East? 9 or more, 8, 7, or 6 or less? So we have a little over 400 votes so far. You've got about an hour left to vote on this thing. 51.9%, almost 52% of the people say it'll only take 7 wins to win this division. 21% say 8. 20% say 6 or less. Just 8% say 9 or more.
Oh, okay.
Bad division, man.
Bad division.
Bad.
Bad division, for sure, for sure. 610-632-0975. We do have some folks that we want to get to. 9-10, we go with our weekly selections. Let's go to Jack and Maple Shade next on the Fanatic. Hey, Jack, how you doing?
Hey, what's up, Devon? How you been?
Been good, thank you.
I was listening to you earlier, and you guys were talking about the running game. I think someone said they could bring a bigger back, and that would be a better look for the Eagles. But, you know, the thing that I'm saying...
That was me mostly, and, you know, a couple of callers agree with it. It was just more, Jack, where I wanted a couple of people in here. In the event that Miles Sanders got hurt, I didn't trust Clement and Scott going forward by themselves.
Well, see, I like Scott. I agree with you with Clemens. I like Scott. Now, you know, Scott, what'd you say? He had like, 8 carries for 30-some yards?
He had 11 carries for 40-something yards.
Okay, so that's almost 4 yards a carry. So I'll buy that.
12 for 46.
Yeah, I'll buy that. The thing of it is, a big part of their offense is play action. And if you don't run the ball, how do you sell play action? You can't sell it. And when they fall behind and they abandon the running game, of course they have to abandon it because they have to catch up, like against the Ravens. And when they had the ball down the 10-yard line, they're down by 2-3 scores. And what's Wentz do? He runs a play action play down the goal, like the 10-yard line. Mm-hmm. Why even waste your time? Mm-hmm. You're running for your life as it is. Who's going to bite on play action when you haven't even ran a running play in the last quarter and a half?
I didn't get it, man. I didn't get it.
I don't understand that, but you just got to keep plugging. Even if you only get 2-3 yards, you got to sell it. Otherwise, you know, how you can't sell play action. It's such a big part of their offense.
It is. And then when you saw it working a little bit, when you saw, as you just pointed out, when you get a 12-yard run from Boston Scott, you mix in Jason Huntley, he gets a 10-yard run as well. DeSean Jackson with that misdirection play with the reverse where he goes for 12. That stuff starts to happen consistently, and you're right. You open things up as well for this football team, and the next thing you know, you're able to take those shots downfield to John Hightower and Travis Fulgham, or even hit, like you did yesterday, Richard Rodgers across the middle for a big gain. You can do those types of things, but to your point, man, it's just it's predictable. You can see when things are going ugly, and you just start to back off and say, "What are you doing, Doug?"
Yeah, and Doug abandons it real quick. I mean, he's almost like Andy Reid now with abandoning the running game. He gets 1-2 yard gain, and it's like, you know, I'm out of here with the running game. You know, it's like pass.
Yeah.
But my other thing was about Brandon Graham, real quick. That guy, my man, has the improvement he's made over the last 4 or 5 years is amazing. I mean, my man is playing unbelievable defensive end. The only thing I got a problem with him is not holding contain.
Yes, on the edge.
He gets sucked in. He gets cold with his drawers down so many times. And it's crash. Now, against the Ravens, he stayed home because it must have been driven into their heads that, you know, you can't let Lamar Jackson out, you know, outside.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, you know, he always, it's, And you know what happens? They run a jet sweep outside against it. They run a little flare pass, whatever. And, you know, that's what happens with the continuing crashing. I just wish he would stay home a little bit more.
No.
Otherwise, he's a Pro Bowler.
I know, man. It's frustrating when that happens with him. I totally agree with you. I totally get it. Thanks, Jack. Give us a word for the NFC East, please.
I was going to say pathetic, but that's not right.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I like the competitive. I mean, what are you going to do, man?
Competitive. All right, you got it, man. Thank you, Jack. 610, enjoy your weekend. 610-632-0975. There's nothing wrong with pathetic. Nothing wrong at all. I don't think.
I think it's an appropriate word to use.
Because they are, but this division is pathetic.
I mean, which of these teams can you even classify? You guys talked about it earlier. Which of these teams can you even classify as, I don't know, okay?
Watch the Dallas-Washington game this weekend. Since we have time, let's see if that's the Fox game of the weekend because of the NFC East, where we are regionally. Let's see if that's the weekend, the Fox game of the week. Watch that game. Watch Kyle Allen.
Do I have to?
Versus Andy Dalton. And let's talk about if that's not pathetic football. Because I think it is.
Well, and you think about terrible. It, too. The Giants have been, their record states they're terrible. And Daniel Jones at times has been terrible. But I think for the most part, outside of, I believe they got beat really badly by the 49ers. But outside of that, I mean, I think they've been fairly competitive in every game they've played.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Are the Giants the second best team in the division?
Giants might win this division. How about that?
We said that. We talked about that earlier in the week. It's not out of the realm of possibility. I don't think it's going to happen.
Right.
But it's not out of the realm of possibility.
It is not. 610-632-0975. Doug in Norristown with us here on the Fanatic on this Football Friday. Doug.
Hi, Devon. How you doing? Great show as always.
Thank you so much. How are you?
I'm good. And you?
Doing all right, man. Trying to figure this whole thing out. The Birds in first place. So there's that.
So, Devon, we usually discuss hoops. I'm the Duke fan that you met before.
Yes.
But we're going to discuss football, if we may. So I'm going to first make a prediction, then break down the Eagles' schedule, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
So the first prediction, I think Washington's going to beat Dallas. And, again, not that either team's good. But, Devon, I just broke it down some more. In the last five games, Dallas has given up at least 30 points. Four out of those five games, they gave up 35 or more points.
Yes.
The only game they didn't give up 35 points was against the Giants, and even that, the Giants still scored 34 points. I mean, this defense, you know, it's probably the worst in football, Devon. And that being said, the Eagles eventually are going to get Goddard back, Sanders back, Aguilar, and anything you could get out of Ertz. I can't imagine, Devon, that Ertz is going to be bad all year.
No.
Based on his past. So you're getting four, I don't know if you want to call them weapons, but certainly four people that's going to be able to help Wentz in the upcoming weeks.
Yeah, and when we talked about this the other day, Doug, I don't know if you heard the show, we were going off of that same premise of no need to make moves at the trade deadline because you're not there. You're not good enough to do anything like that, so don't. Because what you will get from everyone else, those will be your trades, your free agents, your transactions to improve your team in the moment instead of doing something like that. So I hear you.
And then my prediction is, I think they can win a division with six, and here's my reasoning, if I may. So, realizing, obviously, it's the weakest division of football, I figure they can win the rest of their NFC East games. So we split with Dallas, beat the Giants again, and beat Washington in revenge, and then you have five out-of-division games. So only if you win one out of those five, you win six wins right there.
So four division games remaining with the Giants and the Cowboys twice, Washington once, and then the five other games. I got you. I mean, right, we have to look at it some way, right? We have to look at it some way to see if it works out for sure.
Right, because, I mean, especially the way Dallas is playing, I mean, splitting with them certainly isn't realistic. And I think even though the Giants obviously almost beat the Eagles, you could say that the Eagles played their worst football this season, the Giants played their best football.
Yes, absolutely. So on your way out, as good as you feel, Doug, as of right now, a word for the division.
So I'm going to contradict what I said. Abysmal.
Because it has been. Doug, have a great weekend, man.
You too.
Thank you, Doug. You got it. Abysmal is a great word. As of right now, that's all we're asking. You can feel good about what's going to happen. But right now, Doug was right. This has been abysmal. Man, 610-632-0975. That's, you know what, Caleb, hold on. We don't want to rush your phone call and not give you all your time. So if you can hang on, we'll get to you when we get back and everybody else. 910, we will also give our weekly selections for week number 7 in the NFL. A lot of good games out there. You heard Jamie and I talk about it a little bit during the Draft Line show. Let's see if we can go 3-0 this week in the games that we select here tonight. Birds, first place after defeating the New York Giants last night at Lincoln Financial Field, 22-21. Their record now stands at 2-4-1. Their first victory at the Link this season. And they have some extra time off, but they lose some people. DeSean Jackson down, Lane Johnson down again. They will get some players back eventually with Dallas Goedert and a few others as well. But right now, those are the big blows. We're reacting to the loss. I mean, pardon me, to the win over the New York Giants. Right now, sitting in first place, 2-4-1. 610-632-0975. We'll get to the latest news in the NBA as well. So, we'll talk to you when we get back. Right here, 97.5 The Fanatic.
Give me that phone. Javon Givens on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
9 o'clock, broadcasting from the Xfinity studio, only from Comcast on this Football Friday. Football Friday on the Fanatic is driven by AAA. Wherever the open road takes you, take AAA. 610-632-0975 in 10 minutes. Tyler Zuli and I will run through our weekly selections for week number 7 in the NFL. Well, we get to enjoy a Sunday without the birds since they took care of business last night against the New York Giants. 610-632-0975. So let's keep it moving on the phones and make sure we get everybody in. And they're a lot of time. Make sure we give everybody an opportunity, like Caleb in Phoenixville. Thanks so much, Caleb, for hanging on. You're on the Fanatic.
Hey, man, how are you?
Doing great. How are you?
Good, good. Sorry, I was at the game last night, so my voice is gone.
Oh, definitely. Wow. That was an up and down day. What night, wasn't it?
Yeah, without a doubt. It was actually a surprise to get to the game. I didn't know until 20 hours before the game that I was going. It was my first time seeing my dad in 10 years, and we went together. So it was a great experience.
That's great. I'm glad you guys had the opportunity to, first of all, get back together and, you know, hang out with each other and then go to the game and experience that last night. So I'm glad that worked out for you.
Thank you, thank you. We were right in the end zone on the side where Carson Wentz had the rushing touchdown in the beginning. So we had some good views. Everybody was just happy to be there. You know, no one was acting a fool. I think there was a lot of sloppy plays in that game. You know, the Elliott missed kick, the Carson Wentz third down sack, which led to the horrible, horrible punt. But I think we made up for it with some beautiful plays. Like, the long pass to Hightower, I think it was, and then
59-yarder.
Yeah, on the Boston Scott one-handed catch, which was a beauty pass by Wentz.
And Richard Rodgers in the middle, Travis Fulgham for 40 yards. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was definitely a very up and down game until 40 seconds left, and it was a good win. It's an ugly win, but it was a win. And when Daniel Jones took off, and fell, I've never heard so many laughs in my life, and it was great.
He had to be so embarrassed, man. I mean, look, so you ever run so fast where you're going so fast where you start to feel your body kind of tip over and you try to get yourself together? I've done that, but... I mean, man.
Not on national television.
Not on national television. No, not like that, man. But he, and it's crazy because he had so much space. Jalen Mills, who was, I never seen Jalen Mills run so fast. Yeah. He was on him, but Daniel Jones would have scored.
Yeah, he was quick. I was embarrassed with the run, and then it made up for it when he fell.
He ran right by Roby Coleman, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. It was, I looked away, and then I looked up, and he was gone. And thank God he fell. But I have a question for you before I get out of here. That's kind of out of left field. It's a prediction for next year for the Sixers.
Okay.
What do you think Ben Simmons' attempted three-pointers will be per game as of now with all the changes? And that's it.
As of right now, yeah. I would say 0.5.
Oh, no. I have 2.4. I'm hopeful.
2.4. I that would be nice. Right. I would say a half a game just because I don't think they're going to stress it too much. They're going to encourage him to do it, of course. But whatever Doc Rivers comes up with, Caleb, within the flow of the offense to get him easier shots, that's going to, I think, to one of Brett Brown's phrases, rule the day when he's out there on the offensive end of the floor. So I think he'll have success like he normally does. Well, he won't really have to shoot the threes. If anything, maybe, Caleb, he'll shoot some mid-range jumpers.
Mid-rangers, yeah. I'm okay with that, 17, 18 footers. I'm okay with that.
No doubt. Caleb, give us a word for the NFC East as of right now.
Unpredictable.
You're not lying. Week number 7, and we have no idea who's going to win this division. Listen.
7-8-1, we're
going to
win.
I hope so, man. Listen, I'm glad you and your dad had the chance to hang out last night. I'm very happy for you, and I hope things continue upwards for you both, man. Enjoy the weekend.
I'll talk to you next week.
Bye. You got it. Thanks, Caleb. Appreciate it. 610-632-0975. It is unpredictable. It is. It is unpredictable. 610-632-0975. Greg in Bethlehem next. What's up, Greg?
Hey, Devon, how's it going?
Good.
You probably remember from last night's broadcast, Aikman on a number of occasions stressed the fact that with the Giants playing two high safeties, the middle of the field was where you really want to run pass plays. And they pretty much ignored that in the first half. And I was trying to think of why that would be. I mean, I know the tight ends, you know, that's typically where Ertz or Goddard would go, and they're out, so maybe they didn't feel comfortable. But it just seemed like a missed opportunity. They did exploit it a little bit in the second half, but why should it take half a game to make what seems like an obvious adjustment?
It's a good question. It's a good question. It's one of the things that we continue to talk about when we speak about both coaching staffs. I mean, both sides of the football with the coaches, where it takes too long to make these adjustments that just seem so simple, if you will, Greg.
I mean, you would think that you know, Jeff Lurie is watching the national broadcast, and if Aikman can see it, and you know, it, when you saw the images from behind Wentz and downfield, you could see the whole middle of the field was open. So, you know, it just seemed like an obvious opportunity. And I just scratch my head when they run plays and ignore obvious opportunities.
100%. I'm with you. I mean, I have nothing to come back at you with on that one, just because I feel the same way. When you're 2-4-1 at this point, Greg, and you see things like that, and we say this seems very obvious. Why is this not being taken care of? And I can't. There's nothing for me to come back at you with on that one, man. I agree with you 100%.
I guess that explains the 2-4-1, right?
Nope, that's exactly it, which is why I say when you're 2-4-1, these are the types of conversations that you certainly have, man. Give us a word for the NFC East as it stands right now through seven games for two teams and the other two facing off this weekend.
Pitiful.
It is. It's a pitiful division, Greg. Enjoy your weekend, man. Thank you. It is.
Yeah, you too.
You will. Thank you, man. It is a pitiful weekend for sure. 610-632-0975. So during the draft line show, Jamie and I were updating you on what was going on in the NFL, specifically with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Antonio Brown. And Tyler, you said, go ahead.
I mean, ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
It's official. That's our new breaking news sounder, by the way.
That's a breaking news sounder.
How you feel about it?
I like it.
All right, cool. The news is official that Antonio Brown has signed a one-year deal with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and he is eligible for reinstatement in Week 9.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, they don't have to worry about any extra possible suspensions or anything?
I've not seen anything. I would imagine that they've done their homework on that prior to them signing him, so that would be my assumption, but I don't know 100% if that's true.
Okay. All right. Okay, 610-632-0975. Nice pickup for them. Now they have Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, and Antonio Brown. Spread the rock around. That offense is good. Lance in Arizona. What's up, Lance?
Hey, Devon. So a couple of things. On that Daniel Jones run, if you watch the replay, around like the 50-yard line, you see Roby Coleman slowing up.
Yes, sir.
Not giving it his all.
Yep.
And then you see Jalen Mills busting it. And Jalen Mills is slow.
Exactly.
So Jalen Mills is slow enough to almost try to catch up to him, and you're just going to lackadaisical do this slow down, man. Just bench that dude. He hasn't been good this year anyways. I would actually try to trade him at the deadline because I think somebody would give you something for a slot corner. That's just me.
Yeah, when he came in again, he went under the radar, one of the later signings in free agency, and we thought it was a great job by them by stealing him and putting him in the slot. That's going to really work out for you. Talk about as much as a guy that is top five in the league at that position, and he has not been good.
No, and you know who else hasn't been good that they signed? Hargrave,
and I'm mad. You know I like that move, and that's just terrible.
Devon, if you watch that 97-yard drive, they specifically went after him in the run game. Like, he was being moved around easily by the Giants on that drive. It, like, there was two plays where he just got moved out of the way and then went right through there. And then on the pass rush, man, he had an easy sack. Because Barnett missed the sack,
yep.
And it went right into his lap, and he missed it.
I saw
so you're
it.
Paying a ton of money for a guy who's getting the chance now because Malik Jackson's out and they need him. And Hassan Ridgeway, before he left, and his only seven snaps, he looked better.
He did. But Hassan Ridgeway is now out for the season.
I know. They get something good going, and then it hits. But, like, in this game, man, I hear a couple people during the course of the day call up, say, well, why do they have Deshaun back there? Have you not watched a Giants-Eagles rivalry game? Like, Brian Westbrook 2 decades ago won the game on a punt return for a touchdown. Deshaun Jackson has won a game in this series with a punt return. I'm going to put him back there because Greg Ward's not good as a punt returner. He's not going to break one. If you get good blocks on that, Deshaun Jackson don't get hit, and he has a chance to bust it and score a touchdown. So that's the reason why they brought him in. I don't blame him for that. Deshaun Jackson's going to get hurt. He's going to get hurt. That's the reality of the situation when they traded for him and they signed him. He was an injury-prone player, so that's expected that he is going to miss time. So to me, that doesn't bother me that they put him out there because I understand the logical thing.
Doesn't bother me either, no.
The thing that bothers me is we get down to the end zone. What are you doing putting Akeem Butler into the game? And he hasn't played all game, and you run that play, which is a fade, and no offense to Carson Wentz, but that was not a good fade throw. He should have been higher, because I think if he would have thrown it higher,
yep,
the defensive back would have gotten called for a PI, but since he threw it so flat, that didn't happen. And then, like, and then your two-point conversion plays are still the same stupid two-point conversion plays. So did you run out of plays, or are you just not calling very good plays?
I said that earlier. I asked that question earlier, if he ran out of plays again, because the creativity, or at least just seeing different plays in general, was not there for them last night, Lance, in that game, man.
Okay, so not only that, you're in the red zone, right? You ran a fade route to DeSean Jackson, who's being covered by Bradbury, who's 6'2". Why are you running a fade route with a 5'10 receiver against a 6'2 corner?
Don't know.
That doesn't make sense. If you're going to do it, run it with Fulgham, who's a huge guy who can go up over Bradbury and try to get it. Like some of their plays just don't make sense. Like, logically, it doesn't make any sense. Like, add on, Boston Scott, the first series, they got him the ball in the pass game, right? They did some screens. They were creative. They didn't go back to it.
No.
They just didn't go back to it until the end of the game, where Carson wasn't even his first read and just throws it to him. So it tells me you guys don't know your personnel well enough to understand what you're working with.
No, I hear you, man. Listen, on the way out, give us a word for the NFC East, please.
I would say disappointing, because if the Eagles were better, this is like when Andy Reid first took over, or right after the Giants went down, you could have been killing teams in this division and getting enough wins to potentially get home field advantage throughout the playoffs, mm-hmm. and you're just bad.
Yeah, yep, just a bad football team. Have a great weekend, man. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
You too, man.
You got it, man. And now, great call as always by Lance. It is time. Tyler Zuli, it's time for our weekly selections.
Yes, sir.
In the NFL for week 7. Burbs kicked this off right with the W. No matter how they got it, we got a W. How did we do last week?
We did well again. Each of us 2-1 last week.
All right.
So that puts our combined record through 5 weeks at 22-11-3. So if you've been playing along with us at home, you've made some money. You've hit on 67% of the picks if you've played every single one that we've played. And actually, that number would change a little bit because you and I have gone head-to-head a couple of times.
Yes,
but
we did. Last week we did.
Still pretty good. Yes. Actually, 2 weeks in a row we have
two
now.
2 weeks in a row. All right, well, let's see what we do this week. Who goes first? You go first.
All right, I'll go first.
You go first.
We'll start with the obvious one. And the obvious one is, over the last 6 weeks, the New York Jets have lost by a combined average score of 18.6 points.
They stink.
They're absolutely abysmal. And the Buffalo Bills are coming off back-to-back losses against two really good football teams. And I think they're looking to respond because they now only have a one-game lead over, get this, the Miami Dolphins.
Dolphins with Tua.
With a new quarterback along the way next week. By the way, the 18.6, do you know who had the lowest point differential against the New York Jets this season?
That would be game number one.
It would be game number one. You know who it was?
That was, I cannot remember.
For the benefit of time, it was the Buffalo Bills. They're going to look to come out after two straight losses and beat this team like no one's beat this team this season. They're giving 10.5 on the road. But on the road in the Meadowlands means nothing, because you know the last team to win a game, a home game at the Meadowlands was? That's the defunct New York Guardians of the XFL. 10.5 points seems like it should be easy to cover. I'm taking the Bills with the points.
All right. Taking the Bills with the points for Tyler. I like it. That 10.5 is a big number. But the Jets, again, they stink. Let's move on. I'll go to my first selection. Also a 1 o'clock game where we head to Houston. And last weekend, Houston behind Romeo Crennel looking for another victory. They had it. Division game. They had it. It looked like it was going to be good, man. My man, it looked like it was going to work out. Then all of a sudden, Tennessee tied the game up. And A.J. Brown wins it at the end. Touchdown. Tennessee wins 42-36. Houston Texans playing a better football in general. But the Packers are coming off of a game last week in Tampa where they got rocked and embarrassed in Tampa Bay. They want to get back on track. Aaron Rodgers did not look good. They are 3.5-point favorite on the road in Houston. And Tyler, I'm taking the Green Bay Packers with this one.
I think that's a great pick. And quite honestly, I'm not taking the game. But it would not surprise me if we see more of that Aaron Rodgers revenge tour. And they end up hanging 35 or 38 points.
Yeah, this is going to be like a 33-10 victory over the Houston Texans. Maybe 16 points.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're going to get a cover here. I'm going to go with a much smaller line than 10.5, but I am going to stay with a team in the AFC East. And last week, an AFC East team got embarrassed and lost to a team that they should not have lost to, despite the fact that this team is not nearly as good as the dynastic team that they once were. But after you lose 18-12 to the Denver Broncos, Bill Belichick, he doesn't lose two in a row. They need this win to stay around in the East because they're behind the aforementioned Miami Dolphins. By the way, the San Francisco 49ers, who the Patriots are hosting this week, save their season with a very big, big win against the LA Rams. I don't know if they can get that high twice in a row. And the Patriots' next week opponent is the Buffalo Bills. They need this one in order to stay afloat in the AFC East. Cam Newton only giving 2 points. I think that's good enough in Foxborough. I'll take the Patriots minus two.
Oh, I like that one. Look at that little bounce back. Take the Patriots with the minus two. Although, you know, that could be something. Jimmy G coming back.
I think Bill Belichick's going to want to beat his old quarterback.
I know, and he loves him. He
of
loves
course.
Him. But
he wants to beat him.
He wants to, and they need to win. They need to win. Good call.
Can't
by
go
you.
And four.
I'm going to New Orleans in another 1 o'clock matchup here. As we go to New Orleans, the Carolina Panthers last week, I selected them to cover against the Chicago Bears. They lose 23-16. They lost to the Bears. And I was a little surprised by that, to be perfectly honest with you. Nick Foles has that thing working in Chicago for the Bears. The New Orleans Saints coming off of a bye week, but they still having their troubles, Tyler. I mean, they have not been the New Orleans Saints. They're without Michael Thomas, who decided to punch a teammate. And now you have Emmanuel Sanders out, another receiver. And Drew Brees just has not been himself. Or maybe he is himself. This is who he is in 2020. That number is a 7 spot for the Saints at home. Now, I'm not saying the Carolina Panthers are going to win. But that team plays for Matt Rhule, and they want to make sure that they keep pace in their division and not fall too far behind in the NFC conference that they are currently in right now, sitting there with a record, the Carolina Panthers, at 3-3, a game behind who? The New Orleans Saints. And Tampa just picked up Antonio Brown, so you have to think they're going to continue to win going forward. So right now, I'm not saying outright, but I'm saying they are covering that number of 7 on the road against the New Orleans Saints on Sunday, 1 o'clock.
This team's proven me wrong, this Carolina team. The way that I watched them fold at the end of last season, I thought that they were going to be, without question, the worst team in football. Now, I didn't expect the Jets to be very good either. I did not also expect them to be historically bad, maybe one of the worst teams we've ever seen. But this Carolina team's proven me wrong. I think this will be a good game. I don't know. I think you're right. I don't know if they win. But 7 points is a lot for a defense that's played really well and above expectations. Matt Rhule's got that team working. That's a good pick. All right.
You go.
All right. I'm going to go with this one here. There's a reason I saved this one for last. And not only is it because it's the latest of my 3 games, but I've also been a big believer in, and it's helped me win some money over the years, I've been a big believer in bet with your head, not with your heart. So what I'm about to say from here on out is hypocrisy, because I'm betting with my heart on this one. I don't know why. I don't feel good about this, but something stuck out to me when I saw a line of -6.
-6. I don't know where you're going. Okay.
What 5-1 team is +6 in any occasion? Well, that would be Nick Foles and the Chicago Bears. The Bears are getting 6 this weekend as they head to the LA to take on the Rams. And with that, something says it's time for a Chicago Bears disappointment. I don't feel great about it, but something in my heart is tugging at me to take the LA Rams -6 points. So I'm going to do it on Monday night.
I like that. Rams are 4-2. Rams are coming off of the loss to the San Francisco 49ers, where apparently Sean McVay was not happy.
I don't blame him. I mean, they got the ball run right down the middle of the field on them for a lot of the night.
Not happy. So you're
going. George Kittle went off.
Yes. And we're going with the Rams here in this game for you. My final choice for week number 7. I'm sticking with the 1 o'clock game. I like how you went to the Monday night game. We'll be here while the game is going on, so I'll get to see you either happy or ticked off throwing things in the other studio. And I am going to stick to the 1 o'clock game, and I'm going, Tyler, to Atlanta. Atlanta picking up that win.
We talked about this game
Raheem
before the show.
Morris, 40-23 over the Vikings. I was shocked. Jacksonville, last week, the Lions, they hung one on them, 34-16. Matt Patricia and the Detroit Lions need another win. All right? They need another win. And while you take the stink off of last week with that Minnesota game, Atlanta picking up that win, right now, the Detroit Lions, to your point of the Chicago Bears and the Green Bay Packers, they're trying to sneak into that playoffs. We talked about them before the season started. This is not the Atlanta team that you talked about sneaking into the playoffs before the season started. This is a different squad. And right now, on the road, I am going with the Detroit Lions to cover that 2.5 where they are the dog on the road in Atlanta. I'm going with Detroit in Atlanta to cover that 2.5. So that's plus 2.5 for the Detroit Lions. I'm going with that one. All 1 o'clock games.
You know, Devon, I got to tell you this. This is the first time in 2 weeks that you've taken a dog. And this is not only the first time in 2 weeks you've taken a dog, but this is the first time.
I took two dogs.
All season, you've taken two dogs.
Yes.
See what happens.
Let's see what happens. Great stuff by you, my man. Buffalo, 10.5. New England, -2. And the Rams, -5.5. Also for me, Green Bay, -3.5. Carolina, +7. I'm taking that number. And Detroit, +2.5. Those are our weekly picks. Tyler will put those up on 97.5 The Fanatic. Our final segment upcoming. And on the other side, got to tell you, not only about the NFL, but the NBA. Some news earlier today from all the insiders. Right here, discussing. Final segment on The Fanatic.
Give me that phone. Devon Givens on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
.97.5 The Fanatic. Final segment on this Football Friday. A victory Friday as the Birds beat the New York Giants last night at Lincoln Financial Field. Kicking off week number 7. 22-21. It was not great, but they got it done. And right now, in the, what inning is this? Top of the 5th. Looks like the Dodgers are up on the Rays 5-0. This series is tied 1-1. So behind Bueller, Walker. That's a great movie, by the way. They are 5-0 right now in the top
Bueller,
of the fifth.
Bueller.
Top of the fifth right now. They are up. So Morton, not so much. Not doing so great. He's still in there, though. Still giving him a go. And he just walked someone. So there's that. 610-632-0975. But some news in the NBA, folks. How about this? Huh? How about this?
Is it of the breaking variety?
I mean, well.
Ah, okay. I'm just looking for excuses to hit our new drop.
Go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Yes, listen. The NBA, according to Adrian Wojnarowski and Brian Windhorst and Zach Lowe a little bit as well, is pursuing a pre-Christmas Day start and a reduced regular season schedule for the 2021 season, abandoning plans to delay the opening with hopes of incorporating fans back into arenas, sources told ESPN. They're looking at a 72-game regular season, a play-in tournament and the likelihood of no All-Star game or All-Star weekend in Indianapolis. They are considering a two-week break at the midway point of the season, though, according to sources in the story, as they say. Right now, the NBA PA and the NBA are starting about talking about this with the pre-television start. That would, again, allow ESPN and Turner to have their conversations with the league. Overall, free agency, the draft, all of that stuff will still take place. I would assume with the All-Star game not being played, it doesn't mean that you cannot still honor the All-Star by announcing who the All-Stars are through the first part of the season, the halfway point, however they want to do it. If it's like 36 games, you say who the All-Stars are at the break, then go away. Go for it. Midway point, All-Stars. There you go, 36 games. But I am looking forward to this, as you guys know, I'm sure. My question, and I was talking to Tyrone Johnson and Jamie Lynch about this earlier. You know, it's a quick turnaround. That's a very, very fast turnaround for the NBA. After just wrapping up the finals in the beginning of October, they're going to have the majority of October, all of November, and then training camp for December. I don't know about preseason games and any of that stuff, how the testing is going to go. I have no idea. Is it going to be, obviously when they go to 72 games, you're only going to play the Western Conference teams most likely once, figuring out which ones you go out there for, which ones they come here for. You'll play a majority of, you'll probably play all of your games against your division. I'm not going into the story here to check on that. I'm just guessing. Since they don't really have everything locked up, you know, they're trying to figure this out. October 30th, as I see here, is setting up to be a key date. The NBA PA and the NBA agreed that day would be the deadline to complete ongoing discussions on modifications to the CBA for the 2021 season. So that's something that they're going to have to figure out. It is very strange, though, for me. Such a fast turnaround. I thought January, I thought as late as March, but more so late January, early February, let's roll, let's figure this out, less games to get them back on track as best as possible, as best as possible for the NBA. But they're talking about 72 games and Christmas. The date would be December 22nd. December 22nd. So Tyler, I mean, how do you feel about this? Such a quick turnaround. A lot of teams have been out. So you have to look at them as well. The teams that did not make it into the bubble. You also consider the teams that were knocked out early in the bubble. That's enough time for them. But what about the Lakers, the Miami Heat, the Denver Nuggets, the Boston Celtics, who had a longer run in the postseason?
Well, I think it really is going to come down to those specific teams, because if you make a run to the NBA Finals like the Lakers did and like the Miami Heat did, generally speaking, you're done in early June. And then you kick back up in right around this time, in late October, you know, right around the Halloween week is when that first regular season game is begun. So if you think about that, it's July, August, September, and then you get half of June and half of October. Gives you 4 months. So with this being, you know, the NBA Finals ending in early October, you would think it would probably go November, December, January, start in February. This is a really quick turnaround for those teams specifically. The problem is, on the flip side, teams like the Chicago Bulls, the Charlotte Hornets, they've not played a meaningful NBA game since March. Now we're talking for them 9 months without playing.
9 months.
I think you got to find a balance.
You have to.
Because 2 months is not enough and 9 months is too long. But, it, you know, if
so
you
what's
make it
fair. Yeah, what's fair here?
You have January 1st, I think.
That's seven.
I mean, I know it only gives you another week.
Yeah, that's only seven, 8 more days at that point.
All right,
well,
so
really like nine more days.
So what about, you know, what about like January 15th, 2 weeks later?
I would be okay with that. I would be all right with that. Yeah, for sure. I would be all right with that. I'm okay with them also returning. We haven't heard anything from the NHL, correct?
No, I don't think we've heard anything yet.
Yeah, they just go about their business. They're going to tell us like 2 weeks before the season starts that they're ready to go. that's how things work.
We're just going to get a memo.
Yeah,
we're just going to get a memo. Hey, league's back.
Yes.
We're ready to go.
Oh, man. Yeah, this is something, though.
They'll send it via fax.
This is something. So I can't wait to see. I can't wait to see. Yeah, what happens. When I first heard about this, I was like, really? That soon? And that's what it is.
I'm actually surprised that the players are going to be okay with this. And
this is the CBA, I mean, the MVPA as well. They're talking.
I know, and that's what I'm saying. Not just the guys from the Lakers and the Heat specifically, but I think the players probably had a mindset that when all of this was pushed back, that they were going to begin even conservatively January 1st. Mm-hmm. So I would bet you a lot of these guys had a mindset of, all right, I'm going to get a chance to spend the holidays with my family. I wonder if that plays into this at all for them. Because normally they don't.
I guess it depends on how much, how often they were able to be in communication with Michelle Roberts, Chris Paul, Andre Iguodala, and figure out exactly what the latest is, what the NBA is telling them, what they would be okay with in terms of coming back. Because you don't want a situation where you're looking at the NFL right now where there's so many injuries that are happening with these soft tissue injuries. The one thing, though, I do know about, obviously, the 76ers, because we've talked to players. We had Glenn Robinson on. We spoke to Brett Brown. We had other players on that said we were given equipment to stay ready for the season. So they had been working out. Same thing when we had Mikhail on. So we know Phoenix did the same thing where they gave their players some stuff to do during their timeout. A few weeks ago, a lot of people didn't notice, but the other teams were practicing. Golden State was practicing. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson was back out there on the floor. He was out there. So I would suspect that we've seen minimal videos of players working out again. Minimal, very minimal. But they were working out. So I'm curious. Curious to see. I wouldn't think that this news would come out unless, once again, this has not been discussed. We have all of November. I would assume that training camp would start in December. Because think about this. They normally have training camp for 1 week. Then they go on for preseason games for about 2.5 weeks. So if they start training camp, let's say December 1, they go for a full week. December 1, they go for a full week. We're not talking about from, let's say, the first to, let me look at it here. If we're talking about the first of December, which is a Tuesday, then you go to the 8th. They wouldn't play for another 2 weeks if the season didn't start until the 22nd on that Tuesday. The 22nd is a Tuesday. They would have 2 full weeks of preseason games, however they decide to do it. I don't think there will be the 7 preseason games that we normally see. There will probably be about 4 preseason games, I would think, for these players. So that's 2 weeks. That's 2 weeks. So December 1st, okay, training camp. Let's say media day is Monday, November 30th, right after Thanksgiving. And then training camp starts on that Tuesday, the 1st. Start playing preseason games on the 8th. 8th through the 19th. And then the first game of the season would start on the 22nd. So as far as that goes, I could see that happening. I could see that happening. You like that timeline? Start the 1st, media day on the 30th, start the 1st on a Tuesday, then have 4 to 5 preseason games in that 2 week span, end on Saturday the 19th, first day of the season starts on the 22nd, which is a Tuesday.
Do I like it? No, I don't.
Well, just in terms of how I just laid
it out.
Yeah,
I think it's a fine layout. Yeah, I think there's nothing wrong with it from a timeline perspective.
Because it's keeping normally with the trend of what they do.
Sure.
Start media day on that Monday. Tuesday is the day of training camp. 1 week of training camp, normal training camp with no games, just practice, scrimmages, all that stuff. And then you start your preseason games for 2.5 weeks. You start your season that way.
Yeah, I think that's a perfectly acceptable timeline.
So it's really maybe a couple of days off.
Yeah, I think that's a perfectly acceptable timeline. What I don't like about it is the start date, because I think that you're going to get guys specifically on these playoff teams that have made deep runs that are going to feel the impact of only having two and a half months off, as opposed to, and I'm not even talking now at this point, I'm not talking about Detroit and Charlotte and all of those
teams.
About
the playoff
teams. I'm talking about, the Sixers, who have not played since, early September?
They have, they were knocked out in mid-September.
Right, so, I mean, that's an extra month and a half compared to what the Heat and the Lakers had. I think that it's just, I know that it's never good. There's never going to be a perfect date, because the teams that haven't played in forever are going to complain about not having played in forever. And if you pick it too soon, the teams that played in the Eastern Conference and Western Conference finals and in the finals are going to complain about not having enough time off.
I you're right. I wonder how much the load management stuff comes into play for some of these. Now, every game counts, man, because you're talking 10 less games. Talking 10 less games, so every game counts. How much are you going to have load management and risk missing victories? You know, that type of thing. But that's why I also believe it's regional. How much of that stuff early on will be up against the teams in your, like the East Coast? Will the Sixers only play to start? Will they only play Boston, Washington, New York, Brooklyn, possibly even go to Charlotte and Cleveland, Detroit, Milwaukee, those types of games? Keep things very, very close before they start to really, really ramp up that travel, maybe somewhere in February, late January.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good start. And, you know, quite honestly, too, we don't know what their protocol is going to be for fans or no fans or half fans.
Limited.
Or whatever. Well, yeah, whatever it might be.
Yeah, limited.
That will allow for at least a guideline of kind of understanding where we are in terms of will it not work mm-hmm. with more fans in the stands.
And don't forget, first of all, the NFL will be deeper into their season, so we'll see if things start to pick up, although I don't think that's going to be the case when you're talking about an indoor place like these NBA arenas and the NHL arenas. Don't forget, they're going to have that 2 weeks off as well at some point. May not be an all-star break, or might be an all-star break, but no game will be played to give them that rest that you're talking about. Aaron in Norristown joins us here on the Fanatic. Aaron.
Hey, how are you doing today, Kabam?
Good, how are you?
Good. I wanted to talk about the game, but since you were talking about the NHL, they're starting January 1st.
So they did announce that? I missed that.
Well, yeah, they've got to finish it off with the Players Association, but they're going for an 82-game schedule, and they're trying to regionalize it as well. And I think they've already came out with 2,000 fans are allowed in our arena, so I think it's 10% or whatever that is are allowed. I think that was when they came up with the rule for the link, they came up with that same guideline. Now that's subject to change with what's going on.
Sure. Yeah.
So it'd be interesting if both leagues start right around New Year's Day. But the NHL had a little bit, what they did different than the NBA is they went back to back with a lot of their playoff games. They don't have that TV contract that they had to worry about. So as big of a contract. So they went back to back and up into the finals. The NBA stretched their playoffs out. So the NHL get a good 3 months rest before they start.
Yeah, and even when you're talking about right here, when you're speaking about this particular situation with the NBA, starting a little bit earlier than the NHL, which is not normal because that's always the opposite.
Right, the opposite, yeah.
right. But 10 less games. But 10 less games.
Yeah, right. There you go. Well, they got bigger TV contracts.
You're right.
Deal with that,
you're right. Yeah.
So anyway, talking about the game. So I'm critical of Carson just because, he's the quarterback, and that's my job as a fan, as a season ticket holder, to be critical. But I'll tell you what, He is such a hot and cold guy, but I think he's found something from the weight that he put on in the off season. I mean, here's a guy that we were all worried about him getting hurt, and nobody, our whole team's getting hurt but him and Kelsey, and he's getting smacked around. And I'll tell you, he pretty much cost us the Washington game and the Cincinnati game. I mean, you give us those two wins, we're coasting to this division.
I agree.
But that, we can't do anything about that. But what he's starting to put in his back pocket is being a fourth quarter quarterback, which is something that you don't lose. And it's pretty impressive to watch a guy just say, you know what, I'm putting whatever happened behind me and just ball out in the fourth quarter. And he's playing like a man in the fourth quarter. I mean, to watch him, you know, I just hope that he realizes, you know, that he could start playing like that in the first quarter too.
I know, and you saw it, man, and we know they were the scripted plays, Aaron, but still, you know, at this point where you've had so much so far this season, where you had to come back in so many of these games, you know you need to get off to a faster start.
It's almost like they need to start the game down 17-0 so he can start balling. I do want to ask you one other question since you brought up the NBA. Did I read properly that the NBA draft is November 18th?
Yeah. They had already figured that out. Yep.
Is there any talk about the Sixers like being able to trade? I don't know if you guys saw that special on Netflix on Playbook, that LeBron, the interview with his special they did on Doc Rivers. If you haven't, you got to watch that.
I've heard about it. You said it's on Netflix?
It is on Netflix, and they did it on Doc Rivers, and it's, I don't even want to say anything about it. I just recommend taking the 45 minutes and watching it. And if you were on the fence about him as a coach, or you were just there, watch that, and you'll be there. The way he motivated, the word he used from Africa. I don't want to blow too much of the story away. But
Yeah. Well, you put it out there, so we'll hopefully people are listening and take heed to that. And I'll also, especially since we don't have to worry about football, maybe I can fit it into my schedule this weekend, Aaron.
I'd like to know if there's any trade possibilities, like with the, whether they're going to move Horford or, you know.
Yeah. It's been so quiet, man, because we don't know yet. You know what I mean? I think a lot of that stuff, Aaron, will start to pick up once the draft gets closer and closer. They are going to have their combine virtually. And then they're going to have the draft. So I think some of those things will pick up because, you know, a lot of trades happen on draft day.
It's pretty cool to have that in the middle of a football season.
Hey, man, listen, I was just talking the other day, Aaron. I was like, man, we don't have anything on tonight.
Right.
We had everything for weeks. And then we didn't have anything. Well, the game came on. I think game two came on right around 8 o'clock of the World Series. But it almost seemed like we had this void. And now we're going to have, obviously, football. Baseball is about to wrap up. But the NHL and the NBA are going to pick it right back up.
I mean, you're going to have all that. And it's going to be pretty hairy.
It is,
man. I'm looking forward to it, man.
Listen, enjoy the weekend, man. We'll talk.
Yours too. Be cool.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Ty, great stuff, man. Let's wrap it up with the Twitter poll, and then we'll say goodbye to the rest of the folks.
Yep, very quickly, we revisited a question from prior to the season. We asked, with the Eagles' second win of the year and the division being terrible, how many wins is it going to take to win the NFC East? 523 votes on this one. 51% of the people say 7 wins. 20% say 8. 20% say 6 or less. Just 7% say 9 or more.
So 7 is the winner?
7 is the winner by quite a bit, too.
Quite a bit of a margin. Wow. Amazing. Look at that. Well, listen, man, great work by you as always all week long. Really appreciate your help. As always, great job tonight. Let's see what our picks do for this week number 7. Thanks to all the callers, all the tweeters, Barrett Brooks tonight joining us. Also, really appreciate the interaction as always during the week. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. Enjoy the NFL. Be safe. Enjoy the great weather. Also, don't let that pass you by. So we'll talk to you on Monday at 8 o'clock following Inside the Birds Radio. I'm Devon Givens. I'll talk to you then right here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Good night.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.